Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Developing and Enhancing Win-Win Relationships That Add Value to Key Payers and Health Plans in Your Region. The presenters are Clarissa Blattner, Senior Director, Revenue and Payer Optimization, SheFin, Inc., San Diego, California, Karen McFadden, Retired SVP, LabCorp, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, John Norquette, Vice President, Payer Solutions, LabCorp, Swarthmore, Pennsylvania, and Catherine Stoff, Principal, KHS Solutions, LLC, Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Welcome. Thank you for coming. My name is Karen McFadden. I'm retired from LabCorp. I was there for a number of years and spent most of my life, last half of my career, LabCorp dealing with managed care and health plans and any kind of payer that was not straight Medicare or Medicaid or client. So we're going to be focusing on how labs can collaborate with payers and health plans and any kind of managed health benefit, you know, whether it be a TRICARE or VA or whoever, you know, we'd be billing a non-direct client and or non-Medicare or Medicaid. And we wanted to talk about not only how do you get access to a health plan, but more importantly, how do you add value once you're there? It's not just you get the contract and you go, yay, and everything's over. That's really when it really begins. And we want to make sure that you become a long-term, I had down provider, but it really, you want to be a long-term partner. And so the people that are on our panel, every single person has in their title either solutions or optimization. And that's what we really want to focus on how can we show our value? What is our value? And if you don't know what will get you on the panel or will keep you on the panel or make you the trusted partner, that's what we're hoping to achieve today. So what I'd like to do is introduce, have each of them introduce themselves. John, you want to start?
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is John Norquette. I'm at LabCorp. From a responsibility standpoint, my team and I manage our eastern half of the country health plan relationships. Started in the lab business right around the time at Quest Diagnostics. I got bookends in my career, so in the lab industry. So started at Quest in 98, right before Quest acquired SBCL, which was an interesting time. Was there about 6 or 7 years. Spent about 12 years in specialty lab, AP, oncology, women's health. So I was in the out-of-network situation for those 12 years, which is gave me a little bit of perspective on what a lot of folks face, and then came back most recently to LabCorp about 6 years ago.
Clarissa.
My name is Clarissa Blattner. I'm the Senior Director for Revenue and Payer Optimization at SIFIN. I've been with SIFIN for about 10 years. When I first started at SIFIN, I actually managed our outsourced billing department, so the day-to-day operations for about 40 labs and diagnostic providers during that time. Prior to SIFIN, I actually worked at three different clinical and reference laboratories. First at US Labs, then at Clarient, and then at MDX Health. So when I first started in the lab industry about 25 years ago, at US Labs we actually had contracts. Things were kind of flowing. We got reimbursed. So really no issues at all, you know, with billing and reimbursement. When I got to MDX Health, we actually were a startup company. We had a proprietary test utilizing CPT code 81479. So it was a miscellaneous code. There was no coverage. And so we were getting denied on 99% of the claims that we submitted. So I would say that those were the two worst years of my career life because of the fact that I was always in my CFO's office and he would always ask me, where's my money? And unfortunately, I couldn't show him that money. actually two weeks after I left MDX Health and went to Zyphen, we at MDX Health had gotten an LCD. So the 2 years that I spent with the worst of my career, there was actually a happier moments. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to celebrate that. And so that's kind of, I've been in the lab industry for about 25 years, in healthcare about 30 years.
Kathy.
Hi. Kathy Stowe. Let's see, where should we start with my background? I started when I was 10. I spent some time at LabCorp. I spent time at Quest. And I spent some time in a regional lab in New Mexico. From there, I did a pivot and went to, and I'm going to say it, I don't know who is all in the room, the Evil Healthcare Plan, United. And about a year ago, I left United and started my own LLC. If someone has a stop sign.
Oh, that's for me. Thank you. That was for me.
Okay. Anyway, so now I'm consulting a variety of small and not so small clients, just navigating, as Clarissa said, you know, the dreaded 81479, just a variety of issues that when you're a smaller entity and maybe you don't have the staff, I've been able to help them navigate some issues that to them are very large, and to me I'm like, okay, here's what we're going to do, A, B, and C. So I feel very fortunate for my past experience to be able to help some of these folks.
Thank you. You could see we have about 150 years of experience here. So we probably all have run into some kind of problem or issue over the years. We thought about breaking this down, you know, trying to boil the ocean. We had looked at 600 different questions, you know, and we would be here for days on end. So we tried to focus on market access, support for payers and health plans, and public policies. And we're going to probably spend most of the time on the support for payers. So I'm going to ask a number of questions. At the end, there will be time for you guys to ask your own questions. And then I might call on some people that I know in the room to give some good examples. So first of all, one of the questions is, how do we get in network with specific payers? There's a million answers to that. Why is the network closed, and why are in-office labs being excluded from existing plans? So, Kathy, would you like to take that?
Sure. So how do I get in network? That's a pretty that's like saying pass me a Kleenex, right? There are a lot of different brands of tissue, if you will. So my first thing I tell providers is, what do you have? So you're going to these folks, and what do you have that's unique? What do you have to offer? Maybe it's not a test. Maybe you've got mobile services. Maybe you have, what do you have that they're looking for? Do you cover rural areas where maybe are not as well covered, pardon me, John, by some of the larger labs? So maybe you've got that kind of a niche. So you've got to figure out, how am I going to bring value to the plan? What do they need that I have to offer? Because if you just send in your application or you just, right, and there's nothing, how many labs do we need that are doing, and I don't mean any offense to anyone, I'm pretty blunt and straightforward to my labs, how many labs do I need that do CBCs and lipids? Right. So what, okay, if you're doing CBCs and lipids, do you also have mobile phlebotomy? Are you going to people's homes? Are you going to their place of work? What are you offering that's, quote unquote, somewhat out of the box? Are you going to rural areas? So that would be the first thing you have to do, is do a deep dive on what do you have to offer. Because right now, unless you have something unique, they're probably going to say, I don't need another lab with lipids and CBCs. That's probably what the answer is going to be, and you're going to get the, dear John, thanks but no thanks. And in some plans, you can't reapply for 12 months. So in my time at the plan, I used to be very open with folks and say, I know you want to get in the network. But once you submit that application, the time clock starts. So if there's nothing that you offer that's out of the box or nothing to fill a need, you're probably going to get the thanks but no thanks, and now you've got to go back to the drawing board and you've got another 12 months. So you really need to prep before you apply, and you really need to sit down with your entire lab team and say, what do we have that's different? What can we offer? How can we create the win-win? These are going to be our partners, and we don't want to start off by, I'll be very honest, someone reviewing and saying there's nothing here that's unusual. So next, on average, I would get 6 to 8 emails a day of labs asking how they could get in network. So those are the things I would tell them when I could talk to them. And I know that oftentimes they would get upset. And I just say, this is the reality of where we are. Will it always be this way? Don't know.
And Karen, can I add just a little
bit
to that, please? So at Siphon, we deal a lot with multiple labs in different lab segments. And so when I look at the molecular space, because it's new technology, you know, there's a lot of unknowns when it comes to payer education. And what I've found is that a lot of our labs are actually not trying to get in network, but what they're trying to do is go ahead and submitting these claims so that it can prove to the payer that there's some type of utilization. So there's market adoption for the specific tests. And so we are submitting for them on a claim-by-claim basis many a times, and this is kind of across the board, not just in the molecular space, but kind of across the board with healthcare, is that many payers are requesting additional information. So it's on the front end where they're requesting medical records just to prove medical necessity, but then also on the back end, you're getting denials for additional information, or possibly because there's a lack of medical necessity, or sometimes experimental investigational denials. So in that situation, we do, recommend that our labs are doing their denial management and actually submitting appeals on these particular tests. And again, because of the fact that a lot of these tests are new technology, it's one showing utilization for the test, but then also proving to the payer that there's benefits for the test. So as you start gaining more volumes, you have that opportunity to approach the payer and have these discussions. And one of the things that I really, really highly recommend is, you know, nurturing that relationship with the payer. Whether it's the medical director, the contracting department, and so forth, so that you can have that rapport with the payers and then be able to have more productive conversations with them when it comes time to contracting.
John, do you want to add anything?
I think in terms of getting in network, I think we all, even at LabCorp, I would say that part of the challenge is the folks you're going to typically going to initiate some sort of contact with are not necessarily going to know what you know. They rotate through a variety of network assignments over the years. They deal with a lot of laboratories. And, with my team, I always focus on, and when I'm dealing with the network folks, you got to really make it simple for them to understand quickly what I'm trying to accomplish with them to help them. Right, it's a whole notion of. I've heard a lot of labs talk over the years, and I always think to myself, are you really focused on the customer, the payer, or are you focused on yourself and what your board's trying to get you to do? Is you got to be focused on getting them to understand how you can help them. If you look at their websites, 20 years ago, they were insurance companies. They were benefit administrators. It's amazing to see the diversity within these health plans of what they own. If you look at their websites, look at the nationals, what are they going to focus on? You can guarantee they're going to focus on health equity. You're going to guarantee they're going to focus on individual health improvement and population health. Guaranteed. You're going to focus on healthy communities. And think about, as a laboratory, high-volume healthcare service, lots of interactions with patients. You have locations, you've got couriers. In some states where it's allowed, you have in-office phlebotomists. How can you help them be more successful at what they're trying to achieve? As in another session, they're talking about lab stewardship. Lot written over the last 5 to 10 years about appropriate utilization of laboratory tests. We have gotten a bad name in some cases. There's some outliers out there that have created some challenges for the whole industry. And think about your relationship with your providers. Think about how you educate them in terms of appropriate utilization of the tests that you have. For what population? When is it appropriate? How should that test be inform appropriate treatment decisions? We think about that a lot at LabCorp. Is we all have a role in terms of making sure that lab tests are used appropriately. And I think there's been a lot of focus on tests being overutilized. I would submit there's probably more tests that are being underutilized. But it's like, how do we as a laboratory industry, and how do you as a laboratory think about that relationship with providers? Gaps in care. Big focus on from the health plans on how they can improve their HEDIS scores and their STAR scores. And, you know, there are 4 or 5 measures that are laboratory related. How can you as a laboratory help them? One of the things we did at LabCorp is thinking about how do we leverage our locations to branch out into diabetic retinopathy, to be able to offer that as a service, not necessarily even adjacent to the lab industry, but leveraging our locations to help the health plans improve quality and to fundamentally help them be better at those quality scores. I see I'm getting the time that I'm running over, so just a couple thoughts.
Kathy, does the lab meet the quadruple aim? What's the quadruple?
Yeah, so the quadruple aim has to do with how are you going to keep the member, the patient's fees or costs reasonable? And to John's point, how are you going to improve the outcomes or the patient's health? And number three is the patient's overall experience. Do they have a hard time finding your sites? Do they have a hard time finding information, right? And then the last one, which has been added over the last few years, is your providers. What's the experience your providers have with your lab? Is it easy to order? Is it easy to get results? Is it easy to work with your lab? If the doctor has something unusual, is it easy for them to work with you? So if we go down, we're talking about the member, the fees to the member, what's the cost overall to the member, are we improving their health outcome, and their overall experience with finding where you are and dealing with your staff, and then the physicians, their doc. Because if they're not happy, what are they going to do? They're going to go back to the doc and they're going to say, oh my gosh, I went to the Stowe lab and it was awful. Please don't send me there again. So that quadruple, let's make sure that we've got all of our priorities in line. I don't know if that answered, Karen.
Thank you. When you're preparing for a meeting with a health plan, what should you be looking for? How do you understand what the plan's priorities are? And what's your approach? How do you arm yourself with information?
And I think I'm going to pitch that one over to John because we've talked about that before, John, right? I mean, we've said you've got to go out and you've got to research.
Yes.
Look at the website. Go ahead, John.
Right. And we, in terms of how I work with my team on that is at the end of the day, we have to make it as simple for them to understand how we can help them. I mentioned that before. I do a lot of prep in terms of reading health plan websites, reading what they're involved in the community, their foundations, the vernacular they use. I was recently preparing for a meeting, and they were talking about in one of the articles about some meeting they participated in, talked about harnessing siloed data. I know it sounds maybe simple, but if I have a solution that could help them harness siloed data, those are the terms I'm going to use when I present to them. Recently, I had the opportunity. We walked into a large national payer to have a conversation, and it's like I said from the get-go, I don't want to impress you with numbers. right? I don't want to throw out how many patient service centers I have, how many tests I offer. You hear about that all day from everybody. What I'm going to propose to you is how we are leveraging that foundation, and we all have that those foundations, how I'm leveraging those foundations that sometimes get overlooked but are critical to being able to do higher-level things. So if you think about population health, how can I help you from a population standpoint leveraging my data to highlight those opportunities to deploy resource, to deploy initiatives? I can't do that unless I have this really strong foundation. But I don't want to bore them with that. I want to talk about how I have other tools I can make available to them to help them better manage that population. But you gather what they're interested in from these websites, from their earnings reports, look at who they're doing deals with, who they're buying, who they have collaborations with, who they got a JV with, and you walk in with a story to tell about why we're different, why us. Always think about it from the perspective why they should listen to us in terms of being able to help them.
So, John, just a quick question for you, because, you know, with Syphon, we always are asked for data. When we talk about data, what kind of data are payers looking for when you're approaching them?
Well, they're certainly looking for HL7 data. And I think to the and they're looking for historic HL7 data too. So, you know, we heard one of the sessions this morning talking about, I think it was in the AI session, talking about a member only stays with a plan for 18 months. Let's say that's the average. That's true. So when they get their new crop of members coming in, MA, whatever, Medicaid, would it not be helpful to be able to tell them, for this member, what kind of prior lab results do I have that I can provide you to help you better understand the risk you're now assuming and what the general health is of that member. I think the other thing is they're also looking for, if you're dealing with Blue Cross, right, and they have members floating all over, there's a good chance a Blue Cross plan has a third of their members that are living in other states. So if you happen to have a contract in, you know, pick a state, whatever, it might be Florida, and you're providing them with lab results for their members that are there in the state, and you have also serviced their members in other states, there might be an opportunity there. That, and trust me, with some of the falling HEDIS scores or falling STAR scores, there's a lot of emphasis from the health plans to get better at data capture, because it is a challenge. They spend a lot of time and a lot of money chasing those things down. Even from the standpoint that, you know, if you have electronic orders coming in, you know those patients that don't present, those specimens that never present, and you know what those tests are. And some of those tests could satisfy STARS or HEDIS measures. I'll just put it out there. It's an interesting opportunity when you think about it. We all as an industry struggle with the patient that doesn't present. Compliance is a challenge. So, you know, I spend a lot of time thinking about how we can be better at the basics. And sometimes it takes some innovation. Sometimes it just involves asking interesting questions and digging around and trying to figure out, is there an opportunity to do something better?
Thank you. What about competitors? What should we be thinking about our competitors? When you're going into a health plan and you don't have access, what is it you need to know about why they chose that these other labs on the network? Kathy?
Yeah, I think back to John's comment, you really need to do research. You need to know your competitors as well as you know yourself. So researching your competitors, I think, will tell you what is it they're offering. Now, they may have had this contract forever, right? But in order to keep that contract, because they do renew, and there are non-renewals, what are they offering? So you've got to have someone who's constantly looking at those websites and comparing, saying, what is the Stowe lab offering? What is the Norquette lab offering? How do we stack up to those competitors? So it's a lot of research, a lot of digging.
What are the criteria? Because I wanted to ask, mm-hmm. You worked for a company that has lots of labs on it, and then they have a preferred lab program.
Yes.
And so what's the difference?
So the preferred lab, we can kind of walk through all that, right? Do you have online ordering? Do you have online patient appointments? When we talk about phlebotomy, is it just at patient service centers? Do you offer mobile phlebotomy to patients' homes, to their place of work? You know, do you go out to rural areas? You may have some mobile folks that service SNFs or long-term care, but do you also service me at my home or my place of work? Do you have, where I worked, if you wanted to contract with just one line of business, we said no. If we're going to contract, you have to service all of our members, including Medicaid members. So do you have Medicaid IDs for at least 43 states out of 50? Those things. Again, the patient experience. Do you have, what kind of security, IT security? There's two types of ICT security, SOC 2 and HITRUST. What kind of IT security do you have? So those are some of the things, Karen, when you're looking at high quality and some of the things they're looking for to set yourself apart from other labs, those are the things you need to be looking at. What are other folks offering that we're not there yet, maybe we can get there, but what are they offering that we don't?
Well, let's just talk reimbursement. How do you find out what's the going rate, Clarissa?
The Siphon Price Transparency Monitor. So, as many of you know, the federal government, CMS, actually posted information in regards to the Transparency Act, where health plans and health insurances are required to post and publish their in-network rates. So what Siphon has is a price transparency monitor. It's actually published on our website. And what we do is we gather public information throughout all of where we can get that public information on in-network contracted rates. And we publish a grid that kind of shows your average, your high, your median, and your low reimbursement rates. So that kind of gives you kind of a snapshot of what, payers are actually paying in-network providers for a specific test, as well as with modifier information as well.
And I'm going to hand the microphone over. Bonnie, can you...
Special guest.
Bonnie just gave me some ideas, and Kit just gave me ideas on two other locations.
Okay, so I recently needed to get some pricing information, and I didn't know that this was available, but there are cottage industries popping up with this machine-readable file that was available now based on the No Surprises Act. And there's a company out there by the name of Visible Charges, and they'll start out by giving you your own contracted rates back. And I was surprised to the penny how accurate they were with my rates coming back to me. And then it was not a very expensive fee, and they would give me an Excel file for everybody that was contracted with a particular health plan that I was looking for. So Visible Charges. the other one was turquoise, but I did not find them quite as user-friendly because they didn't call me back quickly, and I like to move. So,
thank you. That's something I just found out this afternoon.
Go ahead. If I can comment on that, I just caution that the data that's posted, in my experience, is accurate sometimes and not so accurate other times. And the accuracy is actually kind of declines for the hospital rates. So there is no consequence if a payer, not to say they intentionally do this, but if the payer posts rates that are not accurate, my understanding is there's no consequence for that. My expectation is that will improve with time, but just I would just offer a word of caution. Just, you know, if you're looking for specific codes, specific pricing, specific payer, specific provider, in my experience, sometimes it's spot on, sometimes it's not. Because it's a complicated thing to post every provider's contract rates for every payer. And sometimes the data is even specific down to the employer level.
And Bonnie, if you would like, we actually have our price transparency monitor right outside.
I would.
And
making a connection.
Yes, and we have our SMEs that can kind of walk you through what you're looking at.
Well, I wanted to bring up price because I know to get in network, you can't come in at 400% of what their average price is, and that's why you really do need to know. I always said, I'm never going to be the lowest price lab, but you can always find somebody lower. But the thing is, you can't get that the menu and that footprint and on and on and on. And so that, I think it, you have to balance all of that too. We got a couple questions that were submitted earlier, and I want to go over that. ACO and large medical groups that take risk or receive bonuses, how do you break into them? And how can we be the preferred lab? And on top of that, what opportunities exist for lab to participate in alternative payment models? And how can they work with payers and health plans to develop innovative reimbursement structures? Who wants to take that one?
Mayor, I'm Go ahead. On the APM. I'll comment on the alternative payment model.
Yes, okay. Go ahead.
So a couple things about that. Number one is that right now in today's state, I don't see a lot of alternative payment models out there. But a couple thoughts about that. Number one is to go down that path is obviously taking on a bit of risk. And we all think about capitation as risk, which it is. It's utilization risk. I am aware of one specialty laboratory that put their rates at risk pending some specific clinical outcomes. And so that could be of interest as well, a different type of risk. But in my experience, when I was on the more of the out-of-network side, specialty side, I went down that path with some IPAs in California trying to get them to think about capitation. And the reality was that I didn't represent enough of the spend for it to make it worth their while to actually consider it. So I think that's part of the challenge is you have to go after, in my opinion, a decent chunk of the lab spend, where the trend could be increasing, where there could be concerns around inappropriate utilization, and think about how you could make that utilization more appropriate. The other thing I would think about is thinking about how you would create a straw man of such a model. Don't walk in necessarily, don't walk in with a what do you think about doing something conceptual, but put some thought into how you would structure some sort of incentive system for yourself and for the plan that you're essentially good, they're going to pay for performance. And think about what that could look like. And if to the extent you understand what the plan can do or not do, maybe from an administrative standpoint, is how could you simplify that solution so it doesn't become overly administratively burdensome? Because people don't want to sign up for that. I mean, when I got in the business 25 years ago, the network teams were a lot larger than they are today. That's part of the challenge we have is for a variety of reasons that the network teams have slimmed down quite a bit. And so you have to think about how do I make things simple from an administrative standpoint as well for anything that's innovative.
How do payers and health plans evaluate the performance and quality of the labs that they have in their network? And how can the labs align their metrics and reporting to meet these standards?
Anyway, I think I'll go back to what I had said earlier. You know, what are your KPIs? Not just your, you know, turnaround times and your hours of operation and basics, but again, measuring the member, the patient experience, measuring the physician's experience. So there's more things than just here's our turnaround times, you know, here's this or that for, you know, our patient service centers have wait times within a certain, a 5-minute wait time. That's expected, so you've got to go beyond that and think of different things, as I said, think out of the box and offer those as KPIs to measure. We have mobile phlebotomy that goes to employers' offices and to homes. So if I am a member and I call or I go online, can I schedule an at-home appointment? If I do that, how many of those are abandoned, right? How many times does the phlebotomist not show up? Or does someone have to call you and reschedule?
So, Kathy, is there something on United's website that somebody can look at to say, this is what the requirement would be, and a form or something that they can look at to say, I want to apply, and do I meet this criteria? Or right. Is it on any website? I don't know.
Yeah, so there are applications to apply to become in network. On the United side, there's the Preferred Lab Network. Mm-hmm. That application goes out specifically to those who qualify initially. Are you already in network?
Okay.
Right, so that's not public knowledge unless you qualify. So are you a national provider? Do you meet all of these, the IT security, the online ordering, EMR connectivity? So we go down that road. But unless you're in network, you're not going to get that application. And even if you are in network, there will be a committee who will decide, will you get that PLN application or not?
Okay, thank you. How about some from the audience? Anybody have any questions? Yes, please.
A simple answer, yes.
Thank you. So that's the incentive for the lab to go above and beyond it.
Yes.
Which is why that those transparency models would be helpful for you to know that before you apply. Are you willing to take that kind of reimbursement, whatever that might be?
And they have established long-term relationships with the plan. So it's not someone who's just come into the network because you don't have a record, if you will. You don't have a track record with the plan. So they're established providers.
John, you mentioned using data to help inform the plans as a part of developing that relationship with them, using data, providing it to them via EHL7, about other services that you might know about their covered lives in other states, other regions. But I'm curious, why would the plans not have those data if those data are already inside of the plan in different states? I assume that they are not as integrated as one would think.
They may not be. And so, based on plan questions, you can put two and two together and figure out that the people that need it are not necessarily receiving it. Data and insights can take on a lot of form. It's not just HL7. It's the reports and the tools you can create to better inform their care management teams. You can highlight things for them and make it a little simpler for them. We have an adjacent business called OVIA, which is a patient platform that engages moms, predominantly preconception and maternity and so forth. And one of the things that they do is they're capturing social determinants of health information. So as part of that relationship with the patient, and they can provide that information to the health plans who can connect those patients to community resources to get, to address, let's say, housing insecurity. It is interesting to think about how health plans have gone very wide in terms of the things they're investing in and the way they're trying to attack those problems underlying preventing people from being healthy. But so from the way we think about it is, HL7 is a good start, and there's things you can do to get better at it, but it's how do you evolve and think beyond that. Now that you have all this data, what are the other things and insights you can bring to them? Because you may, the health plans have incredible analytic capabilities, but you might have something that they're just not putting together yet. And so it's about having those conversations and figuring out how can I help them, let's say, with identifying their CKD patients that are emerging in the data that maybe those patients aren't coded properly. And so the severity is not really understood just based on claim data. You're sitting on lab values.
You have another question.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's very similar to the previous question, how you document, you know, the lab results and the patient outcome, because sometimes you have to go to the administrator to show that, you know, you're helping the lab results in terms of patient outcome.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, John, if you...
I didn't quite.
So showing that, you know, the lab results and the patient outcomes, how you document, you know, that process of relating your lab results to the patient outcome.
In terms of experience, or just that you're providing the lab data to them?
And is it making a difference in the outcomes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I think that's where you need to partner with the health plan and say, all right, you know, we have X number of results for CKD patients. And in our experience, we want to see if it's your experience. You know, they're getting the treatment that they need when they need it, or maybe they're not. So I think you've got to work with your health plan to say, who can we connect with on various teams within the health plan to look at that data and say, where are we falling short? Or where are we meeting the mark and we'll continue doing what we're doing? But you need that relationship, because it's not your contracting department. It's your medical team within that health plan who will be most interested in that data. So you've got to get a meeting with those folks to say, we want you to look at our data. We think we're making a huge difference in wherever you are. But we want to know, are you seeing the same thing?
Well, we're getting a stop sign. Is that 10 minutes or? Okay. I was going to ask Anthony he's going to be talking tomorrow, and I wanted to see if you wanted to say any more about what to do with data and just kind of talk a little bit about your tomorrow.
Yeah, awesome. Great for the great plug, Karen. Thank you. So 7:30 tomorrow morning, bright and early, but... This is great, like really great insights that you guys are providing. My mind's going in like a bunch of different directions. One of the things, I worked at a payer for several years in the quality space, so think STARS, Medicare STARS. And the vendors that were willing to take on risk always move to the top of the list. It really shows that a vendor or a lab in this case is willing to be in the huddle with you. And take on some risk, because we're taking risk working with CMS, right? So, you know, John touched on a little bit about saying, hey, we're going to get your gap coverage from 70% to 72%, and we're willing to take some risk on that, some upside, downside risk, things like that. So that can be added into the contracts when it goes for RFP. I think that might move you up on the list a little bit. As I think about data, just so much data you guys have. It's really, really cool. And as you think about a health plan, they need a really strong network of specialists and PCPs that give high quality, low cost. And so can you look at the data and say, hey, here's a group of providers in your network that there's a lot of inappropriate behavior. There's a lot of denials, a lot of appeals that have to happen. And not sure if you're seeing the same thing in your data, but here's what we're seeing in ours. Or what about specialists where they always keep the A1C in range? So whether they're in the network or not, that might be a you know, physician to partner with in order to decrease medical costs. And so we talked a little bit about driving revenue through STARS and even risk adjustment, but there's also a medical cost element here too. And so as we look at like cohorts of patients, I'm thinking like, okay, so in a county or in a zip code, the payer has data available for those patients, but not the other seven payers in that county. So can you look at the 9-digit zip code level and say, here's the trends that we're seeing in all the patients in this county, and provide that back to partners? And maybe that's a solution in the RFP that you can provide. So lots of cool stuff here. Those are some of my thoughts as I'm hearing, Karen. Thanks for the opportunity.
So it's worth it to get up to hear his talk, because I've seen it so far. Anybody else have any questions? Well, I just wanted to thank everybody. The continued discussion, it needs to be collaborative to become a trusted partner, number one. And there are other sessions. Clarissa is going to be in a session tomorrow that's going to be on market access, and her team from Xyphon are going to be doing that. That's at 8:30 tomorrow. You can leave Anthony's and go right to Clarissa's. And then there was one that was this morning that was from Rick Van Ness. You can listen to it. There's going to be a way after this conference is over. There'll be a way to get access to that presentation. But he talked a lot about stars and the impact of the $9 and some cents that we get paid or reimbursed for Medicare for hemoglobin A1C can save $2,000 to $3,000 per member if they capture that data and get the patients aligned, and then they can get, and it's not only, it helps the health plan, it helps the patient, but it also helps the medical groups, and that's where Anthony's at right now, and they get bonused, and they want to get their bonus, so it's not just, you know, how does it impact the health plans, but I want to thank everybody, and we'll be here for the rest of the duration, and thanks for coming.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.